Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to the Schmooze, the Yiddish Book Center's podcast. I'm Lisa Newman, and today I am visiting with my colleague, Sebastian Schulman. Sebastian is the Yiddish Book Center's Director of Special Projects and Partnerships. Prior to joining the center, in his current role, he served as the Executive Director of Kles Canada, a leading organization in Yiddish arts and culture, located in Montreal, Quebec. He's an alum of the center's Steiner Internship Program. He has previously worked at the center as the director of the Translation Fellowship Program and as a development officer. Sebastian is also a writer, editor, and literary translator from Yiddish and other languages, with work appearing with independent press and literary journals throughout North America. He holds degrees in Jewish studies and history from McGill University and Indiana University, Bloomington. Welcome, Sebastian.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be doing anything with you, but especially today in conversation with you.
Okay, well, I ditto from here. I always love the chance to talk with you on any manner of subjects, from translation and Yiddish literature to binge watching. There you have it. So today you and I, full disclosure, agreed that we would have a conversation sort of centered around Jewish American Heritage Month, which takes place in May, and kind of a little bit about related content from the Yiddish Book Center's website, its new core exhibition, Yiddish, a Global Culture, and the works that we have published in translation through White Go Press and Pachentrager, etc. So I know we both came to this conversation with a list, some of it compiled by us, some of it compiled by our colleagues, as we've all sort of delved into this. But I thought before that we got into that, maybe we could talk a little more broadly about Yiddish slash, if I may, Jewish culture in America, kind of its roots, its influences, and some of how this may or may not have influenced our picks and our thinking as it relates around this, and then, you know, specifically in America.
So that's a huge question, and it's a huge topic. And I, you know, we could spend hours sort of unpacking everything implicit in that question. But for me, I think what is so powerful about something like Jewish American Heritage Month and this question about sort of Yiddish and American life is that there are sort of obvious ways to answer the question. We can point to Yiddish cultural production in the United States, but we can also look to sort of more hidden genealogies or histories where, you know, things that we think of as entirely wholly quintessentially American are imbued with a Yiddish sensibility or a Yiddish culture that is oftentimes, you know, sort of under the surface. This kind of grading where you have, you know, Yiddish front and center or Yiddish sort of behind the curtain, as it were, I think makes this exploration of what it means to be American Jew, what it means to celebrate American Jewish heritage, no matter who you are, that to me makes it just so much richer and sort of endless. You can dive into our materials and into this topic forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, as I describe it sometimes, the guilty pleasure of my job here is how much I've learned, and I don't think as a, you know, Jewish American, I cannot understand, you know, it's like it's so essential to understand the roots of Yiddish and how that weaves itself into and influenced. And I think what surprises so many people who come to the center or engage with us in so many ways is the, if I may, outsized influence that Yiddish had in coming to America as, you know, the language of a cultural production, you know, film, theater, literature. Thoughts about that in terms of, you know, you use the word cultural production. And I like to think of it as also, you know, it's a language that Jews spoke, and it's a language in which a culture played out in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of astounding to me that as much as Yiddish became rooted in American life, America also became rooted in Yiddish. You know, I when we were talking about, you know, listing all the different kinds of cultural production, literature, film, music, I immediately thought of old Yiddish film, you know, many of which were, you know, shot in Poland, but so many of which were shot in the United States. And I'm thinking of one film in particular, Greenfields, Grünefelder, which is based on the play Grünefelder, by the same name, by Peretz Hirschbein. And the film, or rather the play and the movie, take place in the countryside, somewhere in Eastern Europe. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, that film was shot in New Jersey, you know? And it's sort of evocative to me of the way that Yiddish writers, Jews, understood themselves through America and then, you know, made America part of themselves. And so you can see sort of shtetl life recreated in American landscapes. And then you see American landscapes, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, rural America, become part of Yiddish culture as well. And sort of seamlessly, you know, New York becomes a place in Yiddish culture that is just as richly Jewish as the shtetl. It's a very powerful thing.
Then, which prompts me with a question to you, there were so many writers who wrote in Yiddish about their experience traveling through America, coming to America. Talk a little bit about that history.
American Yiddish literature has its own sort of schools of thought, its own sort of poetic movements. You know, I could talk about all different kinds of writers, but I actually would like to share a favorite poem that comes from our collections. It's a bit sort of at a slant. When I talk about, you know, the big names in American Yiddish literature, you might have heard of different poetic schools like the Junge, the youth, or Inzach, the Inzachisten, the introspectivist movement. But there's a poem here he was originally Polish, had this very peripatetic life, lived in Birobidzhan, eventually settled in Rochester, New York, a poet by the name of Yisrul Emyot, not a very well-known poet, but someone who crafted beautiful verse. And I was hoping I could share with you, Lisa, and our listeners, a poem translated by the late Leia Zazulier that was published in Pakenträger in 2018.
Please, please, yes.
Okay, excellent. You know, I was originally born in Los Angeles. It's a place that I left when I was quite young. So it kind of lives in my personal mythology. And I think you'll see how it lives in this writer's mythology as well. So first in Yiddish and then in English. Los Angeles, fin Yisrul Emyot. Imriek in Zichendik af Sinai gelitten, in trug dem bissel Bengschaft para jeder Schwell. Wie gefällst es euch in dem neuen Gemell? Palmes ziehen unsier nahe grüne Hitten. Aus dem Teut nicht einmal ausgemitten, erst schwimmt auf mit jeder kleiner Well. Kotsch nem Gramm hell mit Sell, in Zitrinenblitten mit Sibirer Schlitten. Es ist das letzte Werk, es ist nicht das letzte Werk, in nicht dein letzter Hafen. Nor wie amul beim dritten Tug beschaffen, sog wie der Beschäfer, ki teuv, sis geht. Es fällt etwas ins Wetter sach noch fällen, nor alle Farben starben ab in hell, von alle lange Wegen ausgeriet. Los Angeles by Yisrul Emyot. Translated by Leia Zazulier. Restless, searching, and suffering anew, I carry a bit of longing for every doorstep. How do you view yourself in that fresh landscape while palm trees dress you in new green hats? More than once, you've outdistanced death, but now he swims to the surface with each small swell, as if one would rhyme bright with soul's night, and Iberian lemon blossoms with Siberian sleds. It is not your last labor, nor your final haven. But say, as the Creator did on the third day, it is good. It's good. Something is lacking, and much will always be. But then you see all colors die out in brightness, even as they recover from their long journeys.
Thank you. I have to take a moment to pause on that one. It's really wonderful. And, you know, again, I think that there is so much of this writing that we've yet, for those of us who can't read it in the original, have yet to discover. That travel issue had so many pieces about the encounter with America. And then I go on to the book that we did at the center with Restless Press, Restless Books, How Yiddish Changed America and How America Changed Yiddish. And, you know, jumping into that project, how much were we going to be able to find? And that thing is a doorstopper tome, because there is such rich content, which then makes me say, let's maybe jump to see what you have on some of your list that you want to talk about.
Yes. So one of the things that immediately jumped to the surface when a team of us came together to look at our collections and celebrate this month of May was this short film made from a long oral history interview with Leonard Nimoy. So Leonard Nimoy, of course, played Dr. Spock on Star Trek. But here you see him and you know, that's a totally a part of American life. But here you see him talking about growing up speaking Yiddish in the West End of Boston. And you hear him talk about, you know, sort of the influence on Yiddish in his outlook, in his upbringing, in his life. You hear him recite Hamlet in Yiddish. You hear him cite Yiddish poetry by the great Yiddish poet Itzhak Mangir in Yiddish. And again, this is, you know, a figure in Americana. And he is a product of a Yiddish world. And it's what I think is also interesting about this piece. It's a Yiddish world that is not sort of thought of when you think of Jewish America. You think first of New York, perhaps, but Boston too was this Yiddish speaking place. And you have this great actor who went on to inspire, you know, millions of people all over the world. And he credits Yiddish and his Yiddish background as giving him the ability to do this, giving him so much. So that's one of my favorite, you know, pieces in our collection that celebrate this thing we call Jewish America.
Which also, I would have to point out that he reveals in that the how he came to come up with the Vulcan sign.
Oh, yes.
You want to share that a little bit? Because, I mean, that's, you know, found its way into popular culture.
No, oh, yeah.
the Jewish roots.
So I'm not sure I can do it with my hand, but he has this kind of Vulcan salute. He makes what looks like the letter V, splitting his four fingers, you know, into this V shape. And that is actually the priestly blessing of the Kohanim, of the Kohens, the Jewish high priests. That's part of liturgy and Jewish culture. And he brought it into science fiction. And people don't even know that this is, you know, this deeply, deeply Jewish thing that's now, you know, on the Enterprise, you know, millions of light years away. So Yiddish is, you know, Jews in space. You have, you know, Yiddish interstellar, traveling interstellarly.
Another one of those is Harold Bloom, which we were lucky enough to have a recording of Harold Bloom shortly before he died. And he talks about his memory of going to the Yiddish theater as a child and how profound that was. And I think it also had an impact on his thinking in terms of literature, etc. Okay, next on your list.
Next on my list. So you know, we've been talking a lot about how Jews, you know, see themselves, talk about themselves, but Jews and Yiddish speaking intellectuals also, you know, wrangled with all of the complexities of American life. So one of the things we thought was important to have in this collection or to bring out from our collections was a list of works by Yiddish writers engaging with African American struggle. This is a very powerful list of works of literature. We have plays, poetry, prose, children's literature that was put together by the center's bibliographer, David Mazower, around the time of the George Floyd protests. And these are incredibly, you know, powerful and wrenching texts. Some of them, you know, are dealing with racism head on, and trying to find, you know, what are our responsibilities as, you know, new arrivals, immigrants, Yiddish speaking people to this country, you know, in this struggle? How do we fit in here? And there's also translations of Langston Hughes. You know, the Harlem Renaissance was seen as this incredible moment for Yiddish writers. You know, they looked to the Harlem Renaissance as a thing of inspiration for themselves. And so Langston Hughes was translated into Yiddish. You have a play called Mississippi by Leib Malach. This play that was a wild success in Europe and Argentina and in the United States, that really, you know, confronts racism, the legacy of slavery, and puts it on stage in Yiddish. It was also translated into French and to Esperanto. You know, all of these works really show that, you know, American Jews saw themselves at the center of American life, whether it was good or bad or easy or hard. You know, the American dream was something that, you know, wasn't accessible to everybody. And these writers, you know, wrangled with that, you know, sometimes broken promise of America, and were working actively to hopefully heal, you know, these wounds and to lessen inequalities in the ways that they could and they understood. And so that piece, you know, I think is one of the most powerful in our collections.
Yeah, it figures into our core exhibition as well. A lot of those books are on display, and some really interesting, I would just throw in there, which will all be on this list, podcasts about the production of Mississippi, et cetera, and that otherness. I mean, social justice is so at the core of Jewishness, and it's explored. You know, I think of Bluma Lempel, a woman Yiddish writer, in Long Island, comes to writing late in life after raising a family in her 50s. She writes until she dies, which was in 1998. And her stories are just leveling about abortion, about online dating, about nursing homes. She deals with all sorts of topics in a frank and amazing way. And surprisingly, she chooses to write those in Yiddish.
And the writing of Bluma Lempel reminds me of the writing of Fruma Halperin, Blessed Hands, which is going to be our book club selection during the month of May. That is not an accident. Fruma Halperin was a leftist Yiddish writer and wrote about the lives of Jews, of African Americans, of working class people in urban America, people who work with their hands. She herself was a massage therapist, and the translations done by Yirmiyahu Aron Taub are beautiful and bring out all of this kind of grit, you know, that you would expect in these descriptions sometimes of squalor and poverty, but also this kindness, this humanity that, you know, at the time, so many of these stories would have never been heard, would have been ignored. And here is this Yiddish writer saying, no, we have to see these people, we have to hear these people. And, you know, and only now are we going to hear these stories and these voices in English, which I think says something about, you know, the moment she was writing in Yiddish, but also the moment that we're living in now, where Yiddish literature is you know, more and more being made accessible. But what are the choices that translators are making? And what does this say about the place of Yiddish in American life now? So, you know, I think, you know, Bluma Lempel, Fruma Halperin, there's all of these voices, these writers that bring out something about American life that we might not have noticed before.
And also what springs to mind is the three-volume edition that we did, the first one, which is Isaac Bashever Singer's writings on Yiddish and Yiddishkeit, the war years. Here he is, newly arrived in America, reflecting on the country, you know, the old country, and calling to action. And especially in the upcoming volume, you'll see this, the idea of what is it to be a Jew in America and how do you make sure not to, you know, sort of allow yourself not to understand some of the roots, some of the traditions. And he sees all of this unraveling. And it's just fascinating to be inside his head as he's wrestling with all of this. So there's such rich, rich work there. Now, moving on, you're next on your list.
One of the things that I really love in our oral history collection is this series about Jewish neighborhoods across the United States. We have different cities, New York, Washington, D.C., but also a series about rural America. And the rural American Jewish story is another place where we often don't expect to hear Jewish stories. We don't hear these stories. And here are people, you know, narrating the stories of their lives. And, you know, it's oftentimes a lonelier story. These communities are smaller, or there are people who, you know, felt like they were alone or their families were alone. But, you know, in Yiddish, we call it dos pintele yid, this sort of indestructible point of Jewishness that stays with you no matter what. And here we have Jews in a totally different kind of landscape or environment. You know, Jewish life continues in some way and adapts and evolves. And it, you know, it sort of harkens back to the Singer volume you were just talking about. Singer is grappling this whole time with questions of assimilation, and, you know, Jews in America are losing their tradition. They're losing Yiddish, and Singer, you know, in that volume has a somewhat pessimistic view of American Jewish life. And what I see in the neighborhood series and in these interviews about rural American Jewish life is something a lot more optimistic, and a story about adaptability. So yes, something is lost when there is migration, there is assimilation, but the American Jewish story is really about what is gained as Jews come to these shores.
And to that end, I'd say, and for those of you out there who are listeners to the Shmooze, a lot of the Shmooze episodes deal with some of those contributions in funny, you know, we haven't talked about food. Food is a huge, huge subject, popular subject. You'll find a lot about that just in terms of understanding that influence and how it morphed when it came here, dealing with the whole Ashkenazi Sephardic aspect of Jewish culture in America. Another thing that was so popular is Mahjong and its Jewish American roots. So I think that there are so many ways to look at all these aspects. It's fascinating. And you know, you mentioned the neighborhoods and the oral histories. Also, there are some really great reflections on what it was like to be part of the Yiddish theater scene.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Which was, you know, something that saw its, you know, sort of coming to an end early in the 20th century. It was flourishing, etc. Also, there are a lot of things that explore the idea of the influences on Jewish American writers, Roth, Bellow, Grace Paley. I mean, we see those connections, and I think, and I toss this back to you, Sebastian, we see that in the work we do in Great Jewish Books, teaching high school students as well as clerical, how to teach modern Jewish literature. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this to me is another sort of moment where we talk about the genealogy of American Jewish culture writ large. You know, Roth and Bellow, Paley, newer writers like Nathan Englander, Allegra Goodman, you know, these are writers that, you know, I don't want to say that they are reading in Yiddish, because I don't think many of them are anymore. But their work would have an entirely different texture were they not sort of part of a longer tradition of Jewish writers grappling with American life. And so many contemporary American Yiddish writers or Jewish writers see that that slip of the tongue, I think, is exactly the point. You know, they are writing with this legacy in Yiddish. You say, you know, the bichazen and after the plates, you have sort of your library, your books on your shoulders, and so many of the figures in the American Jewish literary scene definitely are carrying their libraries on their shoulders. You know, I think of one work in particular where this is very evident, should come as no surprise to many of our listeners, and that is the Yiddish Policemen's Union by Michael Chabon, which is this sort of magical whodunit, an alternative history set in Sitka, Alaska, which is in this timeline a Yiddish-speaking metropolis. And Michael Chabon really goes to great lengths to create this Yiddish-speaking world and to integrate, you know, Yiddish into the work and to show what Yiddish could have been like in this world. And, you know, I hold up that book as sort of almost an exaggerated example of Yiddish in American Jewish letters, because it is so at the surface. But I think a lot of American Jewish letters, you know, are doing something very similar. And you know, that is at the core of our pedagogy in a lot of things we do at the Yiddish Book Center. You mentioned Great Jewish Books, our high school program. You know, it's demonstrating to our students that these things didn't appear out of thin air. You know, that there are, you know, that roots go very deep. And I think, you know, in English, we talk about roots all the time and sort of the metaphor gets lost. But if there's one thing that the Yiddish Book Center tries to do in all of our programs, it's to sort of en route, you know, the people who use our resources, the people who come to our classes, the people who listen to this podcast. It's to show how deep this culture goes, and how, you know, you are seeing the leaves and the flowers bloom today, and they might look very different than what's underground, but without one or the other, the story, the tree is not there. There's a Yiddish song, which comes to mind. Ich bin a Zweig von einem alten Baum. I am a branch of an old tree, and that to me is also the American story, the American Jewish story. And, you know, America is this place, you know, in American Jewish literature and American Yiddish literature that is typified as being fast and loud, and things get lost. You forget where you come from because you have to make a buck, you know? And what I think our collections highlight is that, you know, you can take it a bit slower. You can take a moment to appreciate where things have come from, and it might help us inform where things are going.
Wonderfully put, thank you. And I also I would add too that, you know, I think what is so much at the core of Yiddish and Jewish experience is also that it borrows from, it evolves, it's constantly changing and influenced by place and sounds and all of the rest of it. I think of Yidstock, and I tell people it's not like you're coming for 4 days of old klezmer music. It's got influences in, from jazz to classical music. It's a rich culture. It's an ever-growing and ever-expanding culture, which has a contemporary relevance from these branches. So quickly, if I may, I know that you have been leading and working on this project to come up with resources. So how will our listeners find this and delve themselves into this rich resource?
So during American and Jewish Heritage Month, which again is the month of May, we will have a special page on our website with a curated selection of resources. These can be read and enjoyed, you know, for your own edification. We also hope that teachers and educators might also take advantage of these materials. There's going to be a wide range of all kinds of wonders from our collections. And this has been put together by a team that's really across the organization. We have members of the oral history department, our bibliography department, our education team, working together to really curate something special. So that's the main portal that you will find most of these materials at. But throughout the month, we will also be sending regular emails with more highlights from our collections. So be on the lookout for those. And last but not least, and really not least, because it's also a centerpiece, a part of, you know, at the center of this initiative, we are also a featured partner with the official Jewish American Heritage Month, you know, collective. This is an initiative spearheaded by the National Museum of American Jewry in Philadelphia, also known as the Weizmann Museum. And on their website, we also have put together some materials for educators and for readers. There'll be a reading list of books that show the place of Yiddish in American life, both published by our own White Goat Press, but also from all different writers and publishers across the United States. And that is at JewishAmericanHeritageMonth.org. So there are going to be lots of ways you can interact with our collections, both on our own website, in your email inbox, and at the official Jewish American Heritage Month website. And we look forward to exploring it all with you.
And without sounding like a commercial interruption, I would also encourage our listeners to check out, if you haven't, book club. I think book club is a way for you to be part of this conversation in a big way. And we look forward to having more and more people join that community and the conversation around these books, which deal with many of the topics we've talked about. Also, check out the Yiddish Book Center, shop.yiddishbookcenter.org. Our bookstore has really quite a wonderful curated selection of literature in English around this. So, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that there will be on the bookstore website a special curated collection that comes out of this work we've been doing. And for the book club, May 23rd, Thursday night at 7 p.m., we will be having a talk with Jeremiah Arntaub, the translator of Fruma Halperin's Blessed Hands, which we spoke about. So please join us for that event.
Great. And as always, we love to hear from you. So if we miss something that we should know about, or you find something in our collection, let us know. We hope to see you here at the Yiddish Book Center to explore it all, and look forward to a month of really great delving into culture. Thanks, Sebastian, as always, and talk soon.
Shalom Dan. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Schmooze, a production of the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts. To learn more about this podcast and to subscribe, visit yiddishbookcenter.org. I'm Elizabeth Carteropoli. Until next time, be well and be healthy.